I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Tennessee Ball Sports Guys here on the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Everything School HQ. Also here over there at Rocky Top Insider's own Ryan Shumpert. Ryan, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Glad to be back on the pod.
I mean, it's been a busy weekend. It's been a sportsy weekend. I was at the Masters on Friday, raced back to watch the spring game on Saturday to Knoxville. I mean, Tennessee baseball with LSU over the weekend. Obviously, Tennessee Lady Vols have a new head coach in Kim Caldwell. Guys are entering the portal. Tennessee fans are just worried about their pets' heads falling off. Shout out to Dumb and Dumber with the transfer portal and basketball well underway. Tomorrow the spring window opens up for football. I mean, it's just a whirlwind of activity all over the place here.
It's nonstop. I mean, I feel like really baseball season last year was the first time I felt it. But there's no like baseball basketball off season. There is, but it doesn't start when the season ends. It starts whenever that roster gets filled, you know, however many weeks or, you know, month and change later that ends up being. So basketball season's over, and there was kind of a slight reprieve for like a week as they were having all those conversations with the current roster and, you know, kind of trying to solidify their board. But it doesn't feel like basketball off season at all. And then obviously we're in the thick of it for Tennessee baseball. Exciting weekend for them. Kim Caldwell trying to put a staff together and get things rolling for her. And then obviously the spring game on Saturday too. So like you said, extremely busy time here in the middle of April.
And Shumpert, sir, 24 hours takeaways. We don't do that during this college baseball season because we're taping this as the series wrap up every Sunday. It's not like basketball, so it's not our 24 hours removed series. But, you know, hey, this is the series ended a couple hours ago as we took our notes and took in a series sweep for the Tennessee Volunteers. This was the one I think you and I, before the season, we targeted as like probably the biggest series, home series, that is, of the year for Tennessee baseball. It has not gone that way for LSU this year. They've really struggled, still yet to win, I believe, an SEC series to this point in their college baseball season. And they're the defending champs. Obviously, there's a lot of bad blood between these two. I don't think these are two teams that really enjoy, as the broadcast alluded to, one another. And it's a sneaky rivalry, because I think you can make the case that these are the two strongest baseball programs. You could throw Arkansas on there too, in the SEC year in, year out, with what Tennessee and LSU have built in recent years. But look, Tennessee still took care of business. They won three games in very different fashion over the weekend to sweep LSU. But your biggest takeaways from this weekend series against LSU, Ryan Shumpert?
I think my biggest, I don't know, this doesn't have to do with Tennessee, but I guess I'll transition it into the Tennessee part, is you're getting another example of it doesn't matter if it's a transfer portal error or not. It's really hard to recreate an extremely elite offense the next season. I mean, we saw Tennessee deal with that last year, where in 2022 they were in just an incredible offense and then it took a huge step back last year. We're seeing that with LSU right now. I just couldn't believe how lackluster really LSU's offense is. And so that's kind of maybe the takeaway that slaps me in the face. But obviously the reverse side of that is, lackluster or not, Tennessee's pitching against anybody in the SEC the way they pitched this weekend was a huge, huge development. And they did end up mixing things up on Friday night. AJ Causey, they kind of used him as not the starter, but the guy that they had throw the most pitches and get the most outs for him on Friday. He got back to form, and Drew Beam had what felt like a really Drew Beam outing. It wasn't the most pretty. There were constantly base runners on, but he just ate outs and was really effective for Tennessee, going toe-to-toe with Luke Holman, who was also really, really good. And then on Sunday, you get another one of these Xander Seacrest starts, not just opening performances from him, where he was really, really solid. And all of a sudden, you kind of exited a weekend where not only did Tennessee's pitching survive, but they could have had a few more. You know, Tony mentioned it the day after the game, like, yeah, we had a few more guys we would have liked to use, or some guys we would have liked to use in a little bit more extended role. And you just kind of saw Tennessee piece it together. What felt like the best.
Who do you think he was talking about there?
As far as who else would have thrown?
Yeah, like who do you think he's talking about? Like, he would have preferred to get more work run out of.
Well, Marcus Phillips was throwing in the bullpen. He might have been a guy that they would have liked to see him throw more. I think Binky is one that, yeah, you know, he came in and got one out in each of two games. I think they would have been happy to see him throw more. And then, you know, he kind of talked about, obviously, he did get a lot of run today and was, again, another really positive development what Aaron Combs has done his last two times out. But he was a guy that was up throwing on Friday, up throwing on Saturday, and didn't get in. And, you know, if things had gotten, you know, a little bit tighter, they probably would have had a quick trigger on him to put Snead in. Obviously, the offense came through and Combs didn't allow any moment of doubt either. So those were kind of the guys that I felt like he might have wanted to see get a little more action, and in Phillips' case, just get some action.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you and I talked about in Jack last week on the show, one of the things that I predicted was that I didn't think the weekend rotation would be the same coming into this weekend. And it wasn't. We still saw AJ Causey, who was electric Friday night. He was back to his old self, which was great to see, but it wasn't in the opening start. He was not the starter. He came in relief. What do you make of Chris Thomas, who was awesome, who got a surprise start as the kind of an opener for Tennessee in that spot? And I thought it was going to be Combs. And as you just alluded to, Combs was really good in this weekend, but we obviously didn't see him on Friday. We saw him today. But what did you make of Stamos and Vitello going to him on Friday night, and then AJ Causey bouncing back right after him?
With Stamos, I mean, it was a guy I was surprised when I guess it was Friday morning, mid-morning sometime, when they announced that it was going to be him. And I didn't see that coming, but, you know, it kind of does make sense. And certainly to your point, he was really, really good. I mean, that's where it starts at. He did everything Tennessee, you know, would have wanted. I, you know, believe got into that third inning. I don't think he got completely all the way through it, but it kind of makes sense in some ways, because when you're talking about a veteran, now, not a ton of experience at SEC, no experience as a starter, at least to my knowledge. I don't think ever is a weekend starter in his 4 years at Cal. Mm-hmm. But a veteran, I don't think he's going to be too phased by the moment. You feel good about starting a game with him. And then two, it kind of goes back to a conversation we've had throughout the year. There's just so many left-handed arms for Tennessee. And where some, he's a bullpen experienced guy. Like, there's just not a spot that it feels like, all right, you go to him in this spot. He's not, I don't think he's their best left-handed arm out of the bullpen. I don't think he's their left-handed tight spot guy out of the, you know, come in a jam spot in a weekend. I think we saw Andrew Binky's that guy. So there's just not, he's a guy they like. He's a guy they want to use. There's some trust in him, but I don't think there's a clear role for him out of the bullpen. When you partner that with the fact that he is a veteran, he's a guy that they trust, I think it kind of did make sense for him to be that option to go to as an opener, not have to use Combs. So Combs is going to be a right-handed arm that they really need in the bullpen probably pretty frequently. I kind of thought it made a lot of sense in hindsight, though I didn't, you know, see it coming by any means.
Yeah, and I wonder, do you think it's something that Vitello is going to rotate? Do you think he saw enough from Causey bouncing back that he goes back to Causey on Friday night as a starter at Kentucky? I mean, Kentucky is a sneaky, now gigantic matchup. Obviously, they struggled there 2 years ago. Kentucky's just they play a very different style than Tennessee. Getting them when it's not going to be cold is nice, though. So that's going to be a good time to catch Kentucky. But what is your estimation? Because we talked about on last week's show that this was going to be like the last weekend to really be testing stuff of this rotation. But I feel like we still don't really, like, we feel comfortable at Xander on Sunday. We feel comfortable with Beam on Saturday. But Friday, Stamos was good, but it doesn't feel like that's going to be a weekly thing. Do you get that same sense that even with Stamos being that good right out of the gate, that Tony's going to roll with an opener every Friday night from here on out?
It just doesn't feel definitive necessarily. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of funny. This podcast, especially when we have Jack on here, is almost like a prelude to the Rocky Top Insider Tennessee Baseball podcast, because I feel like we take a lot of the same conversations. Yeah. You have a day or two later to think about some of the stuff we talked about. And I kind of said the same thing that you just said, where it's like, because Jack had the good point. If you want to figure it out this weekend before Kentucky, but it's like, you're not going to figure it out. Like, you're not just going to have a definitive answer. And things couldn't have gotten any better for how Tennessee scripted their pitching this weekend, and they still don't have it figured out. So you ideally don't want to have to use an opener on Friday night in the SEC. And I think ideally, in a perfect world, Causey, you know, you get him back, you get back the trust, you get back the rhythm, and you feel like he can go deep in the game. But it's just, again, do you mess with a good thing that's working? Do you feel confident that he can go six or seven innings? Because if he can't go six or seven innings, I'm not sure the benefit of starting him, I don't think, is necessarily that huge, as opposed to using him as the first guy out of the pen behind an opener if you only think he can go four or five innings. So to me, that becomes fascinating. My answer is that I don't really know what the answer is. I certainly don't think we're just locked in to Stamos as the Friday night opener or starter going forward, though I would guess that's probably what we see next week at Kentucky. But again, I don't have a ton of confidence in saying that either.
I wonder, and I wonder how Frank and Tony would answer this if I asked them, but like, Snead was still great. He didn't come in for Xander this week. Like, he was in a different spot on Saturday, which was a little bit, because we've just gotten used to the Xander Snead kind of co-starter Sunday experience. But I wonder now, like, I just feel like I understand the thinking of, like, it's just great to have this long term, kind of like what Burns was when he got moved to the pen. Snead's kind of become that electric guy that you can count on, flamethrower, to come in a tough spot, but like your most reliable arm who can go extended innings, this, that, and the other, who's been a starter. I just wonder, at a certain point, you're just gonna have to admit he has to be one of your three. Like, at what point, come maybe it's tournament time, whether it's just regional, super regional, that you have to throw him out as one of your main starters. But I just think, with AJ Russell not returning for a while, it seems, at the very least, and expecting him to be a starter at this point, I think, again, this season, you can correct me on this, you know more, but it seems unlikely to count on AJ Russell as a starter, at the very least, the rest of the way. And if that's the case, and like, we like where Causey was in the bullpen, I'm not sure that you just shouldn't go Snead on Friday next week at Kentucky and just see what it looks like and see what the bullpen looks like as you get healthier, because Binky is back. You have Stamos still there. You have AJ Causey, who could probably go multiple days. You have Combs cooking. I understood earlier in the year why you had to keep Snead there, because you had so many question marks in the bullpen, and he was like the one consistent along with Kirby that you were like, you were certain about in that spot, and you were healthy there. I just wonder, I don't know, I just think you're kind of overthinking it by not putting Snead maybe in that Friday, or at least trying Snead in one of these weekend rotation starts, just because he's just too good, and you kind of just need to do that. But it's also like, you're the top four team in the country. A lot of stuff's working. It worked again this weekend. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but to me, I just feel like at some point you're going to have to try Nate Snead as one of these weekend starter type deals.
When I look at it in the micro, you know, I don't think they need to do that. Like, I don't feel that need. I think, now certainly Xander now all of a sudden two out of three weekends has gotten into the sixth inning and gone deeper, and that certainly decreases the need. It gives Tennessee way more flexibility with what they want to do. But I still think they're fine. You know what I mean? I still feel like they're fine.
But you wouldn't think it would be better if you did Snead Friday, Beam Saturday, and Xander Sunday, based on what we've seen of the three to this point? Because I think all three could go six plus innings for Tennessee.
Let me get around to that in a second, because I see the point. I guess I would say this. I think you saw Snead and look, there's guys they still trust in the bullpen or starting to trust guys more. There's no one like Nate Snead to have in the bullpen. Yeah. There's no lockdown arm in the bullpen. And I think what, you know, a big part of the reason, obviously, I'm sure Snead, if Xander only got two innings today, I imagine Snead would have pitched an inning or two. But a big part we've seen Snead consistently for five innings on Sundays since he hasn't played close games on Friday or Saturday. So that's where Snead is going to be more valuable and they're going to continue to use him is to lock down close games, which he did on Saturday in an incredibly tight spot, which was huge to be able to have. You feel so much more comfortable in a 3-1 game in the eighth inning going to Nate Snead and saying, get us these final six outs than you feel with anybody else of trying to piece it together. So when I look at it in the micro, I'm like, I understand it. Now, when I look at it in the macro and I start looking at a regional where you might have to play four or five games, or you get to Omaha or the SEC tournament, it's I kind of start to see it your way because again, he's so clearly one of Tennessee's three best pitchers. He's probably one of Tennessee's two best pitchers at this point. So, and to the long term, you know, point that Jack made last week, you feel like you need to test some of this stuff out. You don't want to roll with Snead for the first time in the postseason, at least in NCAA tournament. Maybe in the SEC tournament, you get a better feel for that, and obviously, that's a place you can. It's kind of weird to be in the postseason and feel like, yeah, this is a perfect place to tinker, but that's kind of what the SEC tournament is. So I guess I see all of this rambling to say I see both sides of it. I think attacking each series, I kind of like the flexibility that Snead gives them. But when you start looking ahead to the postseason and winning a regional, I certainly see the thought process of going with Snead as a starter.
It should be interesting. So what does your gut tell you on Friday next week at Kentucky? What's your gut tell you?
My gut tells me it'll do the same thing. Maybe that's just me.
You don't think they'll do a different opener? Maybe they go back to Comsey on Friday and they kind of rotate there?
I mean, they could. That wouldn't surprise me. And I don't know enough about Kentucky to know matchups and how all that, you know, what pitcher would play better. But I think you look at Comsey and you say that's by far the second most trusted right-handed arm you have in your bullpen. And you look at Stamos and you say that's third most trusted left-handed arm. And you feel the need that you're going to need Combs more out of the bullpen necessarily than you're going to need. Obviously, I'm not counting Causey as a trusted guy here because he's essentially the starter in this scenario, just not the starter. So I don't know. That wouldn't surprise me, but I would, bet on it being Stamos.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. I mean, it's kind of fun each week that we really don't know what's going to be done at the weekend thing. But I mean, in terms of the, what have you heard? Have you heard anything on the AJ Russell thing? Because like, it just seems like based on the reporting and Tony's comments and things like that, I don't know. It seems like, I think Tennessee fans should operate on the assumption if you get Russell back, awesome, but like, this might be the group. Where do you think it is with Russell this late in the season?
I mean, I think he's going to be back because I've been under that, what you just said, that kind of thought process for a while, but more this week, some stuff that I heard made me think that he will be back. And you say late in the season, and it is late in the season. There's still 5 weeks left. There's still 7 weeks left until these games that truly.
I'm just
truly
saying late
matter.
In the season to get right, to work him back in as a
to get in as a starter.
That's what
And I was going to follow up and say that same thing. I think it's still a lot to think that he's going to be a starter that more than one that can give you maybe five innings and throw 80 pitches. That to me, that maybe not quite best case scenario, but you'd be happy if you got that 100%.
But maybe that's the key, unlocking Snead as a starter. If you get Russell back and then you feel okay, is you have somebody like Russell who you can count on for multiple innings as a guy. Then it's like, okay, we feel better about taking Snead out of the bullpen to be one of our weekend starters.
No, you're right. You definitely would, which is funny because it would just be the reversal of what the plan was, obviously, going into the season. But you're right. You'd feel 100% because everything that Snead does that you like a ton in the bullpen, Russell brings all of that.
They win very different kinds of games over the weekend, but in terms of the offense, Ryan, I mean, Blake Burke and Christian Moore now tied as the all-time Vols home run leaders coming out of this series. That's a lot of fun, and that's a storyline that's gonna be really fun to monitor down the stretch here, because I think it's gonna come neck and neck, and both these guys are probably this is it for them in Tennessee Orange. So I think this is just gonna be a really fun back and forth, especially because they bat 1-2 in the order. But you get Billy Amick back, who did not miss a beat, which was a surprise to nobody. But your biggest winner in terms of the lineup over the weekend for you, who popped the most?
I think it was probably Billy, just from the fact that he was back and he was so good at out of the jump. And you know, really, it wasn't as a great weekend for Tennessee's lineup. I mean, Kavarius Tears had about definitely the worst weekend he's had in SEC play, if not his worst weekend, you know, of the season. Dalton Bargo didn't have a very good weekend. Dreiling and Dean, you know, Dreiling had the huge home run, but you know, besides that, he wasn't super consistent. Curley wasn't super consistent. It was really those that 1-2-3. Those were the dudes that propelled Tennessee's offense. And you talked about winning different styles of games. I mean, they won some low scoring games, which I think is really encouraging. We've obviously talked about the pitching side of it, but a game where Luke Holman really had them locked down for a lot of it, and they just kept on grinding at bats. And I will say LSU's pitching depth's really good. I kind of, you know, took a knock at their lineup, but I was impressed with the number of arms they have. I couldn't believe that their numbers weren't better. They kind of remind me of Tennessee last year, going off the comparison again. Like, they just have a lot of arms that throw real hard. And so, yeah, I would go with Billy Amick, but all three of those guys at the top were really, really good. And just to see Tennessee be able to win some games like that, I think is really encouraging.
Yeah, and I think Billy Amick was obviously great to have back, but I also, it speaks to just the depth that Bargo can have an off weekend, Tears. Like, it's noticeable when he's just not one of the best hitters in the lineup, where you're like, oh, this is weird. Like, Kavarius is just, this is, like you said, a rough weekend, but he's been batting upper 400s for most of this year, and he's been unbelievable. So it's just kind of weird that you're like, oh, he had a weird three, because it's not normal to do what Kavarius has done for a full season. Like, they're going to have these weekends at some point. And Tennessee, like you said, this was one of those weekends where the bats were kind of held in check. And one of the bigger surprises was that it was at home, because Tennessee is just so hard to keep at bay at Lindsey Nelson. And I think LSU deserves a lot of credit for this staff. Like you talked about, was they did a really good job. I mean, Cal Stark, I think, had a good weekend for Tennessee once again. So he continues. I mean, he's now just the everyday catcher. Like, we've now kind of moved on, but like, I don't think that's a really big issue, especially when, if Cal's going to keep hitting like this, he's going to catch like this defensively, be as good as defensively as he's been, be as good for the pitchers as he's been. And it's also like, Cannon Peoples isn't a one-year guy, so if Cal comes into his own and Cal is hitting like this and doing as well as he has, I don't think it's a big issue that, and with Tennessee fans freaking out about where Peoples is to this point in the season, I think it's okay, because it just also just breeds the depth conversation about Tennessee, the development conversation about Tennessee. And I think that what you've seen throughout this year, especially with the lineup more so than anything else, is like, Robin Villanueva got off to this hot start and then it kind of fizzled a little bit. So he's not in the lineup every day. Reese Chapman has had his moments. There's Hunter Ensley has had his moments. You've seen guys bounce out. Like, Antigua's gotten some opportunities. He's flashed with the glove. Rocky Lowry
got two at bats this weekend.
Exactly. So you just have a lot of options. And I just think people probably need to, there's just so much competition in this lineup that, I mean, you're going to see guys in and out. I mean, I wouldn't count Cannon Peoples out the rest of the year, because you just don't know week in, week out, what guys are going to hit like. Tony has shown that the best guy's going to play, and the best, whoever gives him the best chance to win is going to play. So I think it's just, for me, when I look at this lineup and the ways that they're winning baseball games, lineups are going to continue to evolve. They're going to be different every weekend, I think. And I think that's just good, because it also keeps a lot of these guys fresh and motivated. They're like, no spot is guaranteed in this lineup week over week for a lot of these guys.
No, you're right. And you know, it almost felt to the point of Cannon Peoples started on Saturday. It felt surprising when I saw his name in the lineup, which what an upset that is going into the season. And you're right. I mean, it's what I've said, I feel like, a few times when y'all are like, it's got to be Bargo or, you know, so-and-so to DH spot. I just think, yeah, it's got to be them on Friday when they play their next SEC game, but this stuff can change quickly. And yeah, Tony's been really aggressive with pinch hitters this year. I think he'll continue to be, because he can. And going back to the catcher spot, I mean, I know I'm a Cal Stark guy. Look, I've been making a drum for him last year. I think it's the best story on the team. It's got to be. It's one of the coolest stories. And to me, I don't know, I don't follow everything in SEC baseball close enough to say that, but a dude that Tennessee came in and brought a stud freshman catcher in and transfer portal behind him, or in front of him. He didn't leave. He just worked extremely hard. He's one of the dudes that they trust the most, works his command behind the plate. He's gotten even better defensively. I think it was in today's game, you know, LSU was trying to do, which also just didn't really make a lot. I guess maybe they're trying to bunt for a hit, but they were bunting with early in the game today, runners on first and second and one out. It's not a great bunt. Cal just aggressive, smart play, goes straight to third with it, gets the lead runner. Like he's just been so good defensively, and now his hitting's coming around. I don't know. It's to me super cool to see. And in this transfer portal era, leave at the first sign of adversity, leave when your spot's not guaranteed, let alone leave when your spot looked nearly impossible for him to be more than a one game a weekend starter. For him to stay and for him to compete and for him to have the year that he's having, I think is super, super cool and one of the most fun storylines on this team.
I agree. Well, speaking of the portal here, Ryan Shepard, pivoting to basketball here, Tennessee loses DJ Jefferson, loses Freddie DeLeon early in the process. We already knew that Santi, Josiah Jordan James, and Dalton Connect would be gone, but no one really saw, like, there was some scuttlebutt of, like, maybe, like, we've talked about in this program the last few weeks that, like, you could see a scenario where they lose one of Tobias Waka, Jonas Adu, and JP Estrella. And not because that they've done it, that Barnes or whoever has done anything wrong, this and the other. It's just the minutes, and JP popped at the end of this season. And it was one of those where it's like, is JP going to be okay waiting for another year to get big time minutes? Because he might be blocked if both these guys come back. But you see the reporting, and then it's kind of funny with how things play out where it's like, does Tobias Waka enter the portal if Jonas Adu enters the portal before Tobias Waka? And that's something that we have to wonder about, and we'll probably have a good answer on that depending on what Tobias Waka does, because Tobias Waka might be back. And if he's back, then that probably speaks to that being how it would have gone. Jemai Meshack, he was up. Shout out to his mom, who's just fantastic on Twitter. Just an absolute delight. But it looks like, I mean, he was around for the Vol walk this weekend for Orange and White. Seems like he's, it's just amazing how Tennessee fans in Tennessee is just so much like pro sports now, where people are just constantly keeping track of who's where, who's doing what, and this kind of stuff, where it's like, Jemai's in the Vol walk. I think that means he's safe. It's pretty funny to watch. But I mean, he's someone that Tennessee really needs to keep, because Tennessee suddenly, like, you don't want to be in the portal this much because you have one guy in the class right now with Bishop Boswell. You lost the guy from last year's class to Freddie DeLeon. You don't want to have to, like, build out like half of your roster for next year in transfers. Like, you want to do what you did this offseason, where you get a couple and you fill out your depth with those transfers. You don't want to be in a situation where you're having to bring in this many new faces when you're trying to compete year over year like Barnes is at Tennessee at this point. I wonder, Ryan Shemper, with Jonas Adu entering the portal, do you suspect we get Tobias Waka back now in this scenario? And also, how big of a surprise and how big of a loss is it potentially that Adu is most likely staying in the portal and probably not coming back to Tennessee next year?
Yeah, Jonas isn't coming back, at least. Yeah. I guess you never say never. This stuff changes so quickly. And
yeah.
But yeah, I'd be shocked if Jonas is back. Tobias, I mean, I think it's in play. I don't think it's necessarily, you know, I expect that he's going to go through the process and probably take some visits and pursue his options, but I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back to Tennessee. I think that's very much in play. I think Tennessee would love to have him back and will be pretty aggressive in getting him back. So we'll see what happens.
Did you say
there.
Over 50% or under 50% that he's back?
I mean, that's just me guessing a random thing. I'll go over 50%, but
okay.
Again, that's me guessing. It feels close.
Nope, sorry. That's the headline of this clip that I put on Twitter, is that Ryan is certain Tobias Waka is back. So certain that he puts it over 50%.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the Jonas thing, you lose a really good rim protector, you know, at least from driving guards, a dude that became really good at being able to eat up dump offs and oops and be able to, you know, for years with Tennessee's struggles of finding big men between Grant Williams and Kyle Alexander, and really this past year where it felt like Jonas emerged, it was like, man, it would just be so nice to have a big man. Really, the Kennedy year, you felt this way. It was like, to have a big man athletic enough to catch the ball at the rim and dunk it. And Jonas was that. And sometimes he was better. Certainly.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He was had a really rough last month of the season and kind of disappeared in the tournament. Did hit two massive free throws in the Texas game. People shouldn't forget that. Who knows what happens if he doesn't make those. But they lose a really good rim protector against driving guards. I think a dude that was a big piece of Tennessee's defense still being really, really good, you know, without playing two big men. Now, all that being said, I think when you hear the schools that are kind of mentioned with them right now, you know, North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, and the NIL dollars that might have taken to get him back, if you get Tobey Awaka back, I don't necessarily think it feels like a horrible decision or something that was just a backbreaker for Tennessee. It's going to hurt. You lose an all-SEC guy, it is going to hurt. But I don't necessarily think it's going to be the end of the world. But again, Tobey Awaka and what he ends up doing, like you said at the start, it was losing both of them that would be really bad. Losing one of them felt very much in play, if not likely from the jump. You just can't lose two of them. Then you kind of get yourself in some trouble.
Because then you're going to have to start reaching on transfers. Like, that's the part of it, is like, if you lose both, you're going to reach on some people. You're going to take some flyers on guys. You know what you have in Tobey. You know what you have in Adu. Obviously, it would probably mean more Cade Phillips. He's going to have to grow up fast. He's going to have to be a factor going into next year. But I don't know. I mean, this is part of like why, like, they do have depth there. I think JP Estrella is going to be a really good player, but he's a true sophomore. That's a lot on his plate to just suddenly go from relatively no minutes last year to being a heavy minutes guy in year two in the system. I think it's asking a lot for him. Same thing with Cade Phillips. Like, that's just a tough spot to be in. And I mean, the wing depth is already pretty thin. And like, I look to me, like, Jemai Meshach is the one you just have to lock down. Like, you cannot, if Tobey and Adu are not coming back, and that's still very much a possibility, then like, you can't lose Meshach too. Like, that's just too much veteran talent. That's just too much veteran defensive versatility. And what Meshach has been as a heart and soul, like someone who's just been a warrior come tournament time in two very different roles the last 2 years. Like, he was having to play point guard with Zakai out 2 years ago, and he was a big reason why they were able to survive without Zakai for as long as they did, and then playing a different role this year with Santi out and how he stepped up in that way. He's such a perfect glue guy that you cannot lose Meshach. And whatever you got to do to keep Meshach in the fold, I think you've got to do, because there's so much veteran leadership walking out of the building from this Elite Eight team, that if your expectations are to have another deep run and to be one of the best in the SEC next year, you're going to have to bring some of these guys back, and you're going to have to keep this core has to stay. This team has to stay old and veteran heavy. And it's just going to be really hard to do that if you lose Meshach, Awaka, Santi, Josiah, and who am I forgetting?
Jonas and Dalton.
And Dalton, yeah. Like, then you need to reevaluate your expectations if you're as a ball fan next year. Like, next year might be rebuilding year based on how this offseason's going. So it changes very, very quickly with the portal and everything else. But to me, I mean, Tennessee is in an interesting spot, something I did not think that they would be in at this point in the offseason.
Okay, four thoughts, one agreeing with you, one adding on to what you said, and two disagreeing with you. One, I think Jemai would be the worst loss in the portal. Maybe that sounds crazy, but you got to keep Jemai. I mean, he's just so important to this team for a lot of reasons you said. And the thing that I'll add on, you talk about keeping the veteran core together. I think it's important from a leadership standpoint and from a culture standpoint, like a keeper of culture. I mean, you feel, because you're going to have to bring a lot of guys into the roster no matter what happens.
Yep.
To keep the culture the way you want it, you got to have guys that you trust running it. And I think when you have Jemai and Zakai, you feel pretty good about that. Obviously, you still feel good about Zakai, but having a second loud voice and a dude who's going to be out on the practice floor, giving it everything you got every day, I think is huge. Now, the thing I will say, to where I'd kind of disagree with one of the things you said, where you kind of talked about one of the big issues of losing both Jonas and Tobey, of being having to bring so many guys in and take flyers on dudes. Like, I think that's just going to happen either way. I think by far the biggest loss is, I don't think you're going to be able to get a big man not that it's impossible, but it'll be a big challenge to get a big man in the portal, a five that's as good as either of those guys. To me, that's the challenge here, is getting a five that's as good as those guys. Look, they're going to have to take, I guess it's at six right now, even if, is it six or seven? I don't know. I think it's six right now. Even if Tobey comes back, you're taking five guys. You're going to take a couple flyers there. Now, I do think they'll take at least one more prep guy, whether that be a dude has resurfaced in 2024 or maybe a 2025 they get too early enroll. So I think they'll take at least one more prep guy, but I just think you're going to have to take a flyer. I mean, you're filling out a roster, and obviously they have lost now a bunch of important people, but you also lost Freddy DeLeon and DJ Jefferson, who combined to play 2.5 minutes a game last year. So you've got guys you're going to add to the roster that aren't necessarily going to play. So that's the thing I would add there. And, you know, I would just say that I still, that's what you said. If you lose Jamai, you know, maybe turns into a rebuild situation. I don't think it's going to turn into a rebuild situation because I don't think Tennessee's going to attack it at LA. I mean, look at the dudes that they're going after in the portal. They're all veteran guys, and they're all, a lot of them are seniors with their last year of eligibility. Yeah. Now, Tennessee just might be worse. I don't see it as a rebuild situation. I think it's just going to be, you're not going to be.
Well, when I say rebuild, I just mean that your contention's not realistic based on what you're losing this offseason. And like what I just look at it as in terms of like, you just have to reevaluate your expectations going into next year. And when I say rebuild, I don't, look at rebuild. I don't say like NIT or anything. When I say rebuild, yeah, I mean, like, I don't look at it. You're like, if this team last year was the favorite, the preseason favorite to win the SEC, based on how this offseason's going, and it's still, like you said, still a lot of movement and everything else. And part of it's just not, it's out of their hands. Like Xonti and Josiah and Dalton, like there's something you can do there and being the portal what it is. But I just think, depending on how they land the plane here, it just could be, you're like the fourth or fifth best team coming into next year instead of the first. So it's such a fine line. This is such a tough conference, and the transfer portal is just so vicious to every single program right now. I don't know. I just think that that's just kind of what it's going to be every offseason, is like you're hoping that you get the luck that Tennessee did. I mean, it's easy to forget. They got really lucky because I don't think either of us thought that Xonti and Josiah was going to be back after the season last year. And they both pop back into the fold. And suddenly Tennessee's super deep, and you're like, Chris Lidlib's in the fold, and Dalton Connect's in the fold, and you're like, Adu and Awaka, and you just have all these pieces, and you're like, whoa. In this era, it was kind of, Tennessee was in a unique spot to be as deep as they were last year. I think they got very lucky with how loaded they were. And I think this upcoming year is going to be more of what most teams around the country experience. So I just feel like it's kind of like it's a bad wake up call to how the sport is right now for Tennessee basketball fans.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll start with Josiah. I think I said it on here after. That's in 5-ish years covering Tennessee sports, that's the most surprised I've ever been when Josiah came back. And I had someone told me this week in the program is, we're dealing with the reality of college basketball. He's like, we've been living blessed the last couple of years with how some of this has worked, and we're dealing with the reality now. And yeah, no, I think that's fair. Now, I will say, I think they do land the plane. I think they get some good additions in the portal. I don't think they'll be the favorite in the SEC going into the year. I think Alabama might have the best roster in the country entering next season with his, especially if they get Mark Sears and Grant Nelson back, no doubt. If they get Mark Sears, they're still going to be up there. But I still think when all is said and done, you kind of lose some guys sometimes to make some additions in the portal at big spots and be more attractive to some guys and have some money to spend. So I think when all is said and done, we're going to look up and say, I think Tennessee has a top three roster in the SEC heading into next season. Again, long way to go. They could miss some
guys. That's huge. If they can pull that off, that's the vibe I get. I hope, because that's huge. It's just a lot of pressure on this program to finish in that spot and have a top three roster. And I hope they deserve the benefit of the doubt on that front for sure. So we'll ultimately see. But I mean, the Dunbar kid from Hofstra feels like the biggest get. Is that the biggest one? I mean, Tyson seems like a North Carolina. He's from North Carolina, right? The Belmont kid. So I mean, if you can land that one, that'd be a stunner. But I mean, they need him. Like, he would, I think, be a really important player if they were able to land him.
Yeah, I like Dubar more than I like Tyson, too, which maybe sounds funny because you're talking about Cade Tyson as Kansas, North Carolina, and UConn have been the schools mentioned with him. So, but I just kind of worry about his athleticism a little bit. I worry about him being much more than just a catch-and-shoot guy, where I think Dubar has some real versatility. He shot 40% from three, made like 78 three-pointers last year, was consistently good against good teams. I think he scored, they played like three Power Six teams. I think he scored 20 points in like all those games. There's just a ton I like about his game. So, and I think that's the guy Tennessee's in a good spot with. So that's the one kind of early on that I like a lot, where a potential get for Tennessee that I like a lot. I think he would fit a huge need with Josiah leaving.
I would also tell people, I'm like, Dalton Kennett kind of came out of nowhere for Tennessee in the portal. I just think they had to wait to see who was going to leave. And now I think this week will be a big week where names start to pop up more. I mean, obviously they had DeBar this weekend. I think, was Tyson in as well? Was he in? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have more big names. And I think it's going to surprise some people that, like, I think they didn't know. Like, because you have to be so careful with the roster construction and roster retention that you kind of have to see who's in, who's out before you start going too aggressive, you know, in the portal. So now they kind of, like we've talked about, they have a lot of open spots. One of the things they'll have to their advantage is, like, they're a really successful program. They're doing really well. One of the best in NIL in the sport. Is like, you better jump in the boat because we're trying to fill this thing up and we're trying to figure out what our roster is going to next year. And I think it's an envious spot, and you have the cachet for a lot of these transfers of like, hey, come to Tennessee and you can have a Dalton Kennect like meteoric rise playing for Rick Barnes and this group. Like, having the Dalton Kennect factor and him having the kind of season where he was probably the best player in college basketball this year, all things considered, I think should help in a gigantic way in the portal as Tennessee looks to land the plane, as we talked about, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's a selling point they didn't really have before that point, because they hadn't had anybody have a ton of success or really any more than just minimal success. So you're right. To me, what's the most fascinating is that, at least me personally, I've not heard any like five-man names in the portal. That's again, currently with the roster with Tobey not on it, that's the biggest question. I mean, obviously, there's other questions on the roster and other guys they got at land, but you feel like you hear some names, you know, some guys are targeting, you know, the way this could possibly work in a couple spots. Again, you know, maybe I'm sure there are names that they, you know, that they like, but no, I haven't heard one. So to me, at this point, that remains kind of the biggest question.
And they didn't need to do that last year. Dalton Kennect was not one of those guys. And he ended up being one of those guys at the end. Because Ledlam was way higher up on the boards than Dalton Kennect, right? At the time, it felt like Ledlam was a bigger get.
Yeah, well, I'd say so. And a big part of that was because Ludlam had went to Indiana and went to St. John's and visited, where Tennessee locked up Dalton on a visit before he went to Indiana and before he went to North Carolina. And Dalton was, there was a very wide range of where the recruiting sites had him, you know, in the transfer portal rankings. Like, I think 247 had him as like a top 25 guy, and then everybody else had him like fringe 100, where Ludlam was pretty consistently like the 30 to 40 range.
Yeah, and look, they have benefit of the doubt. Don't panic. They deserve the benefit of the doubt, and we'll see what happens. It's going to be fun to figure out this roster down the stretch here.
Fascinating.
Absolutely. Final thing here. Orange and white game happened over the weekend. Who popped the most for you, Ryan Shepherd, and who sizzled the most for you on Saturday afternoon?
Jake Merklinger and Dayton Snead look pretty darn good. I meant to say Gaston Moore, but Jake Merklinger did look pretty good too. I mean, that was kind of adjusted to how pointless the orange and white game is. Mike Matthews' touchdown catch was really impressive. I mean, I think you saw some of that athleticism and the kind of in-air adjustment that he made.
Yep.
You saw why there's a lot of excitement there. I think the guy that he beat on that play is maybe the guy who sizzled the most. I think I said it last week. It's the guy I wanted to watch, being Jordan Matthews. It felt like he had a tough day, got beat on a couple long passes, including that one at the end of the half. So those are kind of some quick names. I mean, the whole backup interior offensive line that was playing with the starters against the ones defense did not have a very good day, but I don't think that was very surprising. And obviously a ton of guys were out. So those were kind of my quick thoughts.
Mike Matthews, I think, absolutely popped. We didn't see Braylon Staley in this game, but for me, the competition at receiver is going to be like, there's just, to me, like, something I wrote down as I was watching this game. There's no chance that Tennessee's going to be able to keep a small rotation at receiver this year. They just can't. Like, there's just too much talent. Like, we wondered last year who was going to be their three, because that's what we've seen through the first 3 years with the Heupel era. I don't think you have a choice. I think there's just too much talent now. Even the freshmen are popping. Like, Mike Matthews and Braylon Staley, I think, are going to have to get reps. I think they're too good. And based on what we heard about Staley in the prep, and also he looks like he might be the only slot guy. Like, you can slot Chaz Nimrod back in there. If maybe Dante Thornton, but Dante Thornton is just so much better. And we saw that did not go as well as maybe people had assumed coming in. He's really comfortable on the outside. He looked really good. I think Chris Brazel really popped on the outside for Tennessee. I just think there's just so much talent. Like Caleb Webb and Nimrod, if they stay, like you look at this group, I just don't see how Kelsey Pope, Heupel, and Joey Halsey don't have a kind of a hefty rotation at receiver this year. And I think it's going to be very different, but I also think to build off that, Tennessee's going to throw significantly more this season than they did a year ago. Last year, the boat was built around Jalen Wright and Jabari and Dylan Sampson. The boat this year, you saw like the running game. I mean, look, Dylan Sampson played very little in this game. Cam Seldon's obviously out for a while. Dylan Lewis, obviously not available as well this spring. I just look at this. This is going to be a pass heavy offense again, like 2 years ago. Like running the ball will always be important in this offense. But to me, Nico was thrown over the middle of the field again, which was something we had not seen since 2 years ago with Hendon. I think we're going to see a whole heck of a lot of downfield assault with this Tennessee offense again. They took a bunch of deep bombs in this game. We did not see in the bowl game against Iowa. So I don't think Nico took a shot downfield in that game. And they still were slicing and dicing one of the better defenses in college football. My gut tells me that Nico's going to have a very, very pass happy, very fun season here as the first year starter at Tennessee. And I think fans should get ready for the kind of aerial attack that made Tennessee's offense special 2 years ago. I think this is just going to be fireworks all over the place in the passing game.
That was an incredible minute 40 of you just getting a little more dramatic and a little more, I guess, just dramatic as developed. I agree the rotation is going to have to be
different. I'm a professional, Ryan. You know this.
I just don't see how, to your point, I just don't see how it's not. Like, it just doesn't seem like there's enough separation and there's so many guys that are solid that it does feel like they just have to, even past four, it feels like it's going to truly have to be six. And even six, it's going to be like someone's going to get cut out. So that'll be interesting to see.
No, I mean, it's going to be great. Oh, go ahead.
Let me go back to your more egregious. The Tennessee offense was slicing and dicing Iowa in the bowl game. Did we watch the same game?
Nico was slicing and dicing. Nico in the run game and
he threw
Nico
for 140 yards.
He also ran for a bunch.
He played well. Tennessee scored 35 points. They got a pick six and they got a touch. They got a drive that started at the 1 yard line on a forced fumble. They scored 21 points on real drives. So slicing and dicing. Like all the Tennessee fans last year who got further and further removed from the Orange Bowl, and Joe Milton's performance was just better and better. And I'm disappointed in you, Chase, because you saw the Joe Milton stuff last year. You had it sold out that Joe Milton was not as good in that Orange Bowl as everyone was saying. And Nico was good in that game, but the offense slicing and dicing? Really? Slicing and dicing?
They were slicing and dicing. And I'll just say, the improv that Nico's gonna do rolling out, like, it's just gonna be fun. I just think there's just too much talent, man, and there wasn't this much talent at the receiver position last year. No. In the bowl game against Iowa, like, there's just so, like, Mike Matthews and the pressure that these young guys are going to put on, and Chris Brazel was also not available. Like, I just look at this group, there is just so much talent in that receiver room right now. I just, with Nico and what I think Nico is going to be capable of doing this year, that combination of Nico plus this receiver room is just going to be one of the nation's best. I just think the sky is the limit, and I would be very surprised if Tennessee's pass offense is not as aggressive and as versatile and as dominating as somewhat close to what we saw. I think it's going to be hard to ever match what they were in 2020, 2022, but I think this group and this collection of receivers and quarterback play has a chance to be really, really special.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a lot better than it was last year. I think they're going to be good. And I do think they're going to be a lot more aggressive throwing the ball down the field. That is the part that I will 100%, 100%
agree. In the middle.
I think about that. Yeah, and in the middle, too. And maybe, you know, you talk about it being really pass-heavy, like 22. I don't really think it was overly pass-heavy in 22. I mean, they passed the ball. It was very aggressive in the passing game in 22.
I guess that's what I mean. More aggressive. They're going to be aggressive in the passing game again.
Yeah. Heupel's offense is just never super slanted. And I don't think you're going to see that this year either. But to your point, and what, again, like I think you just said, you were getting at, I do think they'll be a lot more aggressive.
Tennessee was number two in yards per attempt in 2022, 10 yards per throw. Yeah. I think we're going to be closer to that this year.
Yeah, certainly would think so compared to what it was last year.
Yeah. I will say the other guys who pop maybe was Edwin Spillman is going to be a really good player. Batman pops.
He's a tackling machine, man.
Yes. He and T-Lander too. Like, I think it's just interesting. Arian Carter still out. Obviously, probably the most raw talent in the linebacker room. Keenan Peely's healthy, and that's nice to get him back. I think the linebacker room is going to be really solid. I think William Inch is walking into a really good situation. And there's a lot to like there. The defensive line's the core of the team, though. I think that's probably the deepest on the team. They just flashed on Saturday, and they dominated that first quarter. I mean, it was not like the offense was able to do much against that defensive line early in that one. I guess the only question I still have maybe is the secondary to me. I mean, Boo Carter, I think, popped a lot. I think Boo Carter, he's, speaking of guys who are just going to push, like Matthews, to just be on the field because they're just too good, even if they're freshmen. I think Boo is just going to continue to push. Like, he's a playmaker. Boo had some good tackles at the line of scrimmage in this one. He obviously was returning punts. He's just going to find himself around the ball. Like, Boo Carter just feels like he's someone who's just going to find himself making plays. And you talk about Jordan Matthews having a tougher game. I mean, Jalen McMurray was out there. I wonder about the corners. I wonder about where Tennessee's at in the secondary because, I mean, there were a lot of bombs. Tennessee moving up, like, once they got past the starters and, like, Ricky Gibson and Jermaine McCoy, like, I kind of wonder if Tennessee gets banged up at corner, what that group looks like this year, because a lot of the talk has been about them being more athletic. But we'll see what that actually looks like, because it's a lot of inexperience. It's not like Jermaine McCoy is a graduate transfer corner. I mean, he started as a true freshman last year. He's a sophomore, so he's still really young. Ricky Gibson's a true sophomore. They're more athletic, but they're young. I just look at the defensive line being such a huge part of this, because if the defensive line is the best in the country this year, I'm a whole lot less worried about the growing pains that the secondary might go through, because we just know how important elite defensive line play is to masking some of the issues in the back end if they come up.
No doubt. And I think you hit the nail on the head with a lot of that stuff. Most of the secondary still remains a big question. I don't think it's a question who your starters are at corner. I think it's some level of a question of maybe not necessarily who's going to start, but what a rotation would look like at the star and the safety spots. And you're right, there probably will be some growing pains with McCoy and Gibson, who are both young. But to me, I mean, that's just such a get me to growing pains. Give me the breath of fresh air of playing the young athletic guys who are pretty talented. Let them play through the growing pains. I know I had a lot of pain watching some veterans corners that weren't very good. So I'll take the growing pains of dudes that are pretty talented and have a higher ceiling. So you're right. You know, there were a lot of big plays. None of them that I can remember were against those first team corners. But where the last couple of years, it felt like Tennessee maybe went six deep at corner without a massive drop off. It feels like there is a sizable drop off. And that probably goes on both ends too, where I think maybe Tennessee's starting corners are a little bit better than their starting corners have been the last year. But those third team corners are also probably worse than the third team corners have been the last few years.
Yeah. Final thing, and we'll go. Based on what you saw from the running backs, based on the health of the running back room, what is your gut instinct and take here, Ryan Shepard? Do you think Heupel ends up adding a running back in the portal, or do you think he stands pat? What's your prediction, clairvoyant Ryan Shepard?
I think he goes and adds somebody. I kind of think they have to. I mean, if Cam Seldon rolls his ankle and then misses a half, do I feel like Deshaun Bishop or Khalifa Keith, or obviously we haven't seen a ton of Peyton Lewis, so he looks, you know, I think he's a talented guy. Can one of those guys step in and be the backup? Yeah, I think so. I think you can get by a game. You can get by a half. You have a serious injury or you're missing Cam Seldon, you know, he has some setbacks in his shoulder recovery and he misses 2 or 3 weeks. I'm just not sure you can get by with Dylan Sampson, who's obviously really talented, but not a super big physical guy. And then what Tennessee has behind him with some of those second year backs and then Lewis. I'm just not sure you can really get by. If that happens, then it might start being a super pass heavy offense, who instead of an offense that seemingly never gets more than 60% run or pass, you might start pushing the limits a little bit.
I don't think he does it. I just, until I see the running game struggle in the Heupel era at Tennessee, I'm not going to bet. Like, I'm just going to say Dylan Sampson, Deshaun Bishop, and Cleva Keith are fine until Cam Seldon and Peyton Lewis are healthy. I wouldn't overthink it. I think this offense is a really plug and play. They rotate anyway. I mean, what did Jalen Wright average a game in terms of carries? Was it like a 10, 11 maybe?
Yeah.
Like, let's not overthink this. I think it's going to be fine. I don't think they should mess with the room. I think get those guys healthy, see where you're at come fall. I wouldn't add anybody post spring. I wouldn't go that route. I would just bet on your system, bet on your blockers to open up those holes, bet on the pass game to be back to what it was, where I think there's going to be better run lanes anyway for this defense, for this offense. To me, I would hold steady. I wouldn't go into the portal for running back. I think they'll be fine.
Well, you mentioned Peyton Lewis and him being healthy. I think that's probably the big question, is what's your trust level in him? Because he's going to be healthy, unless there's another injury. He will be healthy by the time
this
starts
the season.
He's your
fifth guy.
Well, that's my question. If he's the fifth guy, if he is behind Deshaun Bishop and Cleese Keith, I think they should go get another guy. Maybe they won't do it. Obviously, Heupel has a lot of confidence. There's always, he puts a lot of trust in his guys. And you know, I'm not saying I need to like go get the Oregon State guy, someone who's going to cost him a lot of money. And I'm not, basketball transfer portals kept me busy enough. I don't know all the running back names that are going to be out there. So maybe it just doesn't make sense to bring. You don't just bring in a guy to bring in a guy. Don't bring in Madre London. Deep cut, hold your applause for the Madre London reference. You don't just bring in Madre London to bring in Madre London type of situation. But if there's a guy that's not going to cost a ton that you feel like can be a capable backup, I think it's worth it.
Interesting. I'm going to say he doesn't do it. We'll end on a different note. I'm going to say he doesn't do it. Ryan Shepherd, what can the good folks check out from you over at Rocky Top Insider this week?
Yeah, a lot of transfer portal stuff. Obviously, basketball will keep churning. We'll have everything to know on that front. Football stuff, if there's any sort of action with Tennessee pursuing somebody or people jumping out, we'll have that. And then plenty of Tennessee baseball stuff. I'll be up in Lexington next weekend as the Vols head up I-75 for what's going to be a huge, huge series. You know, one of the biggest on their schedule, probably this and Vanderbilt, two biggest ones left, honestly, when you look at it. So should be a fun series, and I'll be there.
I think South Carolina will be a good series.
That will.
Yeah.
It's funny how they only ever play South Carolina the first or the last weekend in SEC play.
That's kind of what they do in football. Like football, when they have them at home, I feel like it's always early in the year. And whenever they're on
early
the road, South Carolina. Yeah, it's never it's never in the middle. It's always early or late for South Carolina.
Yeah. But it's literally, I guess 19 was my first year covering the team. I think they played them the second or third week. So that was early. 20 when it got canceled, the team was loading the bus to go to Columbia when the season, they got told, you're not going to Columbia, COVID's here. And then since then, it's either been the first series or last series. It's kind of strange, but that should be a fun one.
There you go. Ryan, thank you as always, my friend, and I will talk to you next week.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.